Well, hello again. Welcome to the podcast. This is Joel Maines, and I'm here with my dad. How are you doing today, Dad?
I'm okay. It's kind of funny to look across and see you, and you have a beard. All the times I've done these with Karen, I've never seen her with a beard.
No, I'm not going to look like Mom, and thankfully she doesn't look like me. That's good for her and both of you, I guess. We don't prepare these, so we're trying to be spontaneous and take some workload off you as you age and get older and try to work into this. I think you said this week, but you said you wanted to take on a really tough topic today. So, okay, well, we're going to be getting into a heavy one today. So buckle your seatbelt. Everybody, stick around.
Welcome to the Before We Go podcast, featuring Dr. David Maines and his son, Joel Maines. Here's David and Joel Maines.
Lay it on us. What are we going to talk about?
I'm doing a lot of reflecting.
Right.
Big sections of my life. I'd like to talk about a problem that I have had, and it relates to you as well.
My son? Your son?
Yes. No, not you. But my workaholism, which was a big part of my past, and I know that brought pain to family members, including yourself.
Right.
So I'm just looking at big blocks of time in my life. It's the first time I've had a chance to really reflect that much on the years that the Lord has given me.
Okay, so you want to take on workaholism. That's kind of a word that people use very loosely in the world. They can kind of just mean I'm a hard worker. I'm a workaholic, you know, and they can kind of do that. But I would say in our family, that's probably does not carry that connotation. It's a kind of a painful word for us because of yours.
When would you say you were aware of this being a problem of your dad?
I think it came to a head probably in college for me. That's when we started to really work through our issues. I mean, from my angle, it was neglect or like feeling like you weren't there. We didn't have a word for it at the time. But everybody.
Well, there's some good that has come out of all of that.
Of course.
I was oblivious. In fact, I remember the tears when talking with you. And how much pain you felt, that I wasn't there. I was always somewhere else.
Mentally or physically or both, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, the good news is this is not a downer program because you've made some amazing progress in this area and had some great healing. I think people will like hearing about that as well. But I do think you've always said workaholism is kind of one of the sins in the church that is encouraged. It's, you know, you kind of get encouraged about it.
Yeah, people think that you're a very dedicated follower of Jesus. So.
Right, so it's easy to maybe glorify it a little bit. When do you think that first started getting addressed in our family?
Well, it was because others brought it up. I remember Karen talking about it, and I kind of sloughed it off. I didn't think about it that much. I thought that I was the ideal husband in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. But when she began to express emotion more, you know, you're not there. You just, I would say, I didn't know how to say no to anybody. You know, it just whatever job was there, that was an opening door from the Lord. And
every job is done with 100% of effort.
I would say that I shared also in the problem of perfectionism. Yes, I wanted to do the best job possible. And did in a lot of ways. But it took a toll because I wasn't there for Karen and obviously the rest of you as the children. You guys said I wasn't there for you as well.
Right. Well, let's maybe back this up a little bit so we can put a context for people because it's a big label we're kind of putting on you. You started out in the ministry in the inner city church in Chicago, Circle Church, in the 60s.
Building from scratch.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that was a huge amount of work, for sure, because you're starting a church, you're doing something groundbreaking. It's a multiracial church, so you had a lead pastor that was white, Caucasian, African-American, and Asian.
And we had a woman on staff.
And a woman on staff. I mean, these things were, I mean, they would still be kind of make people look twice and say, oh, that's very interesting. So here you're talking in the 60s. You don't even have a vernacular for some of the things you were doing. Lots of work. So, and lots of, I was very, very young, but I'm assuming lots of conflicts, lots of trying to work through very complex issues. Is that fair?
Sure, of course.
Okay, so then...
Been there, done that. And all the mistakes you could make, I made all of them.
Oh, right. Okay. And then you move into radio, which is a nationally syndicated radio program, 15 minutes, six times a week. Mm-hmm. And that was a very different kind of work. You don't have the pastorate type of work, mm-hmm. but you're just cranking out program after program, day after day. And you I think that's kind of...
You do well you for bit. The first 2 or 3 months. Then all of a sudden, there are more programs to be made than you're capable of making that often.
Anyone who's worked in a job like that, whether it's television or mm-hmm. maybe someone who writes a syndicated column or something like that, understands the grind. It's like a train that just constantly, your job, you think you're going to be conducting, but what you're really doing is shoveling coal into the cane, the train for just ever. It never stops. And it's, mm-hmm. your best program is yesterday's program. So you need tomorrow's program.
You're talking in analytical way now, but when you talked about who I was, there was a lot of pain because my first priority was get those deadlines done, and it didn't leave any time for people like you.
Right.
And it's not just you and the family, the others in the family felt the same thing.
Well, and I would say for all of the great things about your mom, Grandma, she was also a huge perfectionist on you as well. I remember distinctly you talking about when you graduated high school, you had a memory. Why don't you tell people about that? Because you graduated very high in your class.
I was number 2 in the class. It was about 1,000 kids in the high school, so it was a relatively big school, not like maybe a Chicago school. But I came in number 2 in the class, and my mom's, golly, I hate to rat on my mom, but her comment was, "How did you let that girl beat you out?"
Yeah, that's terrible. That's terrible. Terrible thing to say to you. Now, you had not told them, is that correct? So it was kind of a surprise to them that you had... Salute a Victorian? Is that what that is?
I have no idea. It was number 2. I know that, and number 2 wasn't number 1. And my mom had a lot of good qualities. I'm very grateful for my parents. I think I've shared that many, many times. But that kind of set me up. You never achieved. There was always something more that you could do.
Right.
And... I was kind of, I was born and bred in that kind of a milieu.
And you had very successful siblings on both sides, older and younger. Mm-hmm. And your talent was not, maybe some, you weren't athletic, you weren't, things like that. Uncle Doug was a very... I guess you could call him renowned orthopedic surgeon.
Yes.
Your sister, Donna, phenomenal piano player, things like that. So mm-hmm. some of the things you excelled in were not maybe...
You're making me feel like I have a good excuse for being who I am.
Well, no, but I think it places it in some kind of context, which mm-hmm. was helpful for me as I was working through my own pain. But then you get into the radio broadcast, which becomes... This slog, I guess, is what you know. Mm-hmm. And that kind of consumed you.
You finish one recording and you immediately go to your desk and begin to work on what you're going to do for the next day. And that's 6 days a week. And on top of that, I was continually coming up with new ideas, which involved pastors around the country.
And, you're talking about the 50-Day Spiritual Adventure and the Advent series.
Those are both examples, yeah. That took a huge amount of work. And I think that probably I didn't hire as professional a person as I should have. I always saw the potential in people, but sometimes didn't see why that potential was not always being realized.
Right, or maybe it's fair to say not everybody was willing to... Be on the treadmill like you were. Yeah, so people are like, hey, don't want to live that way.
Yeah, workaholism is a form of idolatry, though, is that you take great pleasure in what you're doing, especially as you're successful. But you were cheated. Other members of the family were cheated. And I would say that God was cheated. I knew what it was to talk about prayer, to put together a sermon on prayer. But I didn't know what it was to actually live in the milieu of constant communication with the Lord and a sense of finding His approval in terms of what I was doing.
Okay. Well, I hear you say that. I don't know if that's completely fair, because I have many memories of like waking up in the morning, early in the morning, going into the kitchen and you'd be in your study kneeling, praying for revival or something like that. So I don't want to, make it sound like you were not a person of prayer, because you certainly were. I know people, like if my father ever says he's going to pray for you, believe me, you're going to be on a list that he's going to pray through. That's going to be something he follows through on.
Workaholism, however, over time, it's like probably alcoholism in a sense. Mm-hmm. The first drink is not a problem, but over time, it begins to take over your life. And in that sense, it becomes idolatry, because there's a great sense of joy and fulfillment in what is going on. And getting other people, including your family, to support you in what is going on. And when a family member says, I don't like it that you weren't there for the play that I was in, mm-hmm. or whatever, there's no explaining after a while. You've created a monster, is what
yeah, happened. And I think, like, when I was in plays in high school, I tend to remember you being there. When I was in baseball, neither you or mom, I had 13 games and you guys came to one game that I ever played baseball. That's because you were gone all the time. You were flying and speaking. And if I had been a partier kind of kid, our house would have been, you guys were just gone all the time. I probably drove to the airport more than anybody in my high school, because I was driving there, dropping you off, picking you up, you and mom, both yeah. of you. So it was probably home alone. When I say alone, I mean Jeremy and me at that point, because Randall and Melissa were in college. Probably 4 days a week you were with us, and then the other days you were not.
Mm, we would take turns as to who would be traveling on a given weekend, which...
But a lot of times it was together, too. Mm-hmm. You were both speaking. But I think some of my other memories of you were you would write at the table. So you'd have your briefcase out on the dining room table, and you would just be working. So just many memories of walking through the house, and there's dad. So you'd go to the office, but then maybe you wouldn't finish. So you'd come home, work at the table, which for my personality, every child kind of dealt with this differently. Me, I kind of felt like, well, he's doing God's work. What's my little problem compared to that, right? So I didn't want to interrupt you. I felt like I was interrupting something.
Yeah, your older brother would be more prone to interrupt.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And younger Jeremy would just be like, you're my dad, you're going to deal with me, which would drive you crazy sometimes. Because
he had no concept of that.
The pressure.
There were X number of hours left before you had to go into the studio again.
Right. Yeah. But I do think, you know, to nail home some of these things physically, you know, like if you would come to our house now, mom always has the dining room table set. It's always set. And it's beautiful. She does a wonderful job. And she has an elegant style. So it's seasonal. But it's always, the whole table is always set. So for dinner, right? Mm-hmm. Or whatever, for company, for
lunch, if that's
but
when
people I come. Think a lot of that was because that was her way of taking back that space and saying, no, you're not going to take over this. I am going to make sure that you can't put your stuff out on the table, because it's such a hassle to move all the settings and the things like that. But those are some of the ways it manifested in the house of dealing with, how do we deal with dad who can't get his head out of mm-hmm. the work?
And there's a high to that. I enjoyed, you enjoyed success, enjoyed
the kudos.
Yeah, they come. You know, I'm at the place now where if I go into the grocery store, nobody knows who I am. Mm-hmm. I remember the days when that wasn't the case. You'd have people point and kind of whisper. And
well, I would say in our area, that was more than that. I mean, if we would ever go out to eat, more than likely, someone was going to stop us and say, hey, you're David Maines. And then people are nice and kind, but they also didn't really understand space. So you're with your dad, and then someone comes in and monopolizes 5-10 minutes of your time, and they're gracious and kind, but there's also a side to you that's like, this is my time with my dad. Why are you, you know, taking that up? I remember having resentment sometimes for that.
Anyway, if, as I look back at my life, I would say there was a very long section that would go decades before I came to the place where I said, this needs to be confronted. And I didn't have a concept of the pain that would be involved in doing that, and learning to be less than what in my mind was as good as I could do. And at the same time, making up for the lost years with Mom, with you kids, and with the Lord. You know, I am not a workaholic now. And I am enjoying my time with the Lord. I spend more time in Scripture. I spend more time praying, and those are not busy work to me. Those are relational sense that I have with the Lord, and saying thank you. Thank you for putting me through a situation where I had to say, okay, that will no longer be a part of my life if I'm going to be who I think God wants me to be. There's a lot of things that are nice, humanly speaking, but are not necessarily what God has in mind for you. So I would say those are my testimony of change. Do you see testimony of change as far as your dad is concerned? Not like I used to be, or am I still, you know, I don't carry a briefcase anymore.
Yeah, no, you were constantly with your briefcase. The briefcase was one thing. It was the mental not being present, which was very hard. Mm-hmm. I think, well, this started, we had a family gathering at one point, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
I want to get your answer, but I kind of want to maybe build up some of this. We had a family gathering once because Mom was kind of getting on you about, this is a problem. You know, I think it is like that. Whatever addiction it is, where somebody finally says to you, you have a problem here, and then that person says, no, I don't. I'm totally in control.
I said those words.
So then we had a family gathering, which was a typical thing for the Maineses. When we had an issue of some sort, we would kind of gather and talk it through, which was healthy. But then this was, is Dad a workaholic, right? Or I don't know if we use that term, but...
Yeah, you did.
Okay. I did?
Well, all of you. I remember...
So what is your memory of that?
My memory is, it was actually during a 50-day spiritual adventure, and we were to attack one self-destructive pattern in our lives, and I had chosen, I won't even say what I chose.
It was something pretty petty compared to workaholism.
And Karen said, that's not your problem. Your problem is you're workaholic. And I said, I'm not workaholic. And I went to Randall. Randall, am I a workaholic? And Randall said, yes, you are. And we went right around the table after Melissa, your turn, and then Jeremy. And everybody in the family was saying, yes, of course you are. And that was not used in a gentle way. It was used as...
No, there's pain there.
And I said, I was mad. I don't think I left the table.
No, I think you felt ganged up on.
Yeah.
Which is what most people in an intervention feel.
Well, it was Dad against the rest of the family.
We had not rehearsed that, though. I mean, I think that was just everybody saying, no.
This it felt clearly like it. And I had to take it to the Lord. And either you guys were all, you know, on being unfair, or maybe I was being blind. Mm-hmm. And then it was a real battle royal, because... It was a battle because you have your hands gripped on that thing, and when somebody starts peeling away the fingers,
right. The train's still moving. Yeah. You can't just say, okay, we're not going to do a broadcast for.
And then tears, you know, 3 months. Tears on your part, tears on my part.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I'd like to do that program over again. It wasn't good, you know. And then you have to say, leave it alone. There'll be another one tomorrow, and so on, so on. And then that had to be, in some ways, making up time with you guys.
Right.
I don't think that other people see it as that big a deal, but one of the things that you and I do now, and we fight to do it because you don't
Well, we work to do it. We make effort to do it.
Fight the schedule.
Yes.
As you and I have said, okay, what would we enjoy? And we're trying to get to all of the baseball parks in the country, which
right.
gives us time to be together in the car, driving there and so on. And last year was most unfortunate because we did get to one baseball
park.
No,
we didn't. We were rained out a couple and just schedules didn't work. So,
yeah.
But we have one coming up and hopefully we'll get in two or three this year.
That would be wonderful. And maybe even before I'm gone, we'll have nailed most of the ballparks.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll get them all in before you don't want to mess with the parks anymore. But but yes, okay, that's something on the tail end of growth. Mm. I think you and I, you know, as parents, listen or try to think through their own relationship with their kids. And some of those can be very rocky, of course. And then I want to sing your praises here a little bit, Dad, because you... I mean, when I hit college, I ended up with some deep pain because of all that time by myself. And, you know, that's neglect, too. It also messes up your concept of God, because then it's like, well, does God really care about the little things in my life? You feel like you can only bring big things to God. So you have to wrestle with all the, everybody does this, you know, your father image, how do you transpose that upon to God, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if your father's abusive, then it's easy to think of God that way. These are kind of basic thoughts, and I'm sure people are very familiar with this. But me with you, I remember starting to go through some healing, and I didn't have memories. I just had pain. And it was very hard for me at first because I was like, why do I have this huge
mm-hmm.
pain for my dad, who I know loves me? And then trying to work through that, I realized, yeah, well, neglect is a tough one because you don't have the memory of dad shouting at me or saying something like your mom mm-hmm. said to you, how come you let that person beat you
mm-hmm.
at the, you know, in school? So I didn't always know how to articulate it. So it just came out raw. And then you and I had some, I guess you would say, battle royales of just emotion. And you're hearing emotion from me that was never expressed because I didn't express mm-hmm. it. And I thought, you know, that, you know, must have been very painful for you.
Oh, heavens, yes.
But also you handled it. I mean, not at first. I think at first you were very defensive. But then after a while, you very wisely and graciously listened to my pain. And I hear you. I hear you. I've heard you. I've hurt you. And that was a big turning point for us. You know, I can sit here and talk about this now with almost no residual pain for that. I can think about it. Like, if I think about it, it's like, oh, yes, that was a hard time. But I don't, there's nothing in me. I mean, that's all forgiven. It's all
mm-hmm.
Cleared up. So I think you did very well with that on the tail end, as hard as that was.
Yeah, I thank you for, you know, that expressing it that way. There was great error on my part. Great immaturity on my part, you know, and I look back, I look back and I say, well, I know today that Karen's got things that she would like me to do, including painting some of the furniture that's old and then doing some work in the garden. I wouldn't have even considered doing those things, you know, X number of years back.
Right.
But now I do that. Why do I do that? Because I enjoy gardening, not necessarily, but I enjoy my wife, and I want to show her that I love her, and that's one of the ways I can do that. But, you know, you grow and you learn and you go back. I would say that I am a recovering workaholic,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's a fair statement as to who I see myself as at this point. And I have a way to go, but I'll do better. Come back if I'm still alive 2 years from now.
Well,
and I'm better.
I believe that. I would say you are recovering too. Do you feel, though, I think you, certainly how it manifests in your life has certainly changed. Do you think that core part of you, though, that is still, I mean, not to over psychoanalyze this, but still looking for your mom's approval, or is that healed, do you think? Or
I think
are you working around it? You're basically building the discipline, or 'cause those are tough. Was there?
I think that I'm aware of the process that is going on in my life, and I'm grateful for it. And I'm, you know, I'm able to look back even in terms of my parents and talk with them in a sense and say thank you for who you were. You were very good parents, mm-hmm. considering your background and considering your desire to be good parents to your children. Thank you very much. You were a huge influence on my life, much more so than I was able to give you credit for in earlier years.
So you can look at that with gratitude,
yes.
as opposed to a resentment of their failures. Which I think is part of maturity for all of us, right?
We're all very fragile people, aren't we?
Yeah, I think mm-hmm. I think we are. I think you know we all have our issues we're dealing with. One thing I respect about you is the openness to talk about these. I mean, I do think I've seen you talk about this with people, church people or whatever, and they do tend to brush this off. They'll be, oh, yes, workaholism, of course, you know, but you want to be doing work, right? Or they'll say lots of comments that are deflective of the pain of it. Mm-hmm. And you don't, you always say, no, there is pain here. So you acknowledge what that is to put work before family, to put work before God, I guess. I mean, you can easily do God's work, quote unquote, God's work, and not have God involved in that. I mean, we've all mm-hmm. seen ministers and churches and things that fall into that trap. It just becomes busy, busy work. I've worked at, you know, whatever, ministries and places where it's just a paycheck for some people. You know, they've lost sight of the fact that why they're doing what they're doing. But I do think, you know, I admire you, Dad, in the sense of tackling this massive, massive thing. And I see you, I think for me, what's encouraging is I see in you a pleasure in not working. There's a difference between not just doing the work, but also a pleasure in the gardening with Mom, or being, you know, you and I going to the ballpark, the baseball parks, and that's a big shift, and that's where, to me, I say, yes, this is healing. This is healed. Maybe not perfectly, not every layer of the onion, but something that you've taken on and you've, you know, brought before the Lord, and you've made massive, massive gains in. So, you know, I know this is something you're kind of embarrassed about, but I do want you to hear as your son that I appreciate immensely that work you put in.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. We didn't resolve everything, but we had a healthy discussion.
I'm not qualified to do that.
I love you.
You too, Dad. I love you too.
You've been listening to the Before We Go podcast. And if you would like to write to us, please send us an email at the following address, hosts@beforewego.show. That's all lowercase letters, hosts@beforewego.show. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please remember to rate, review, and share on whatever platform you listen. This podcast is copyright 2024 by Mainstay Ministries, Post Office Box 30, Wheaton, Illinois, 60187.